Let's see. Janetta's 40-minute speaker is Duke F. from Dana Point. Let's have a nice hand for Duke.
Hi, my name's Duke, alcoholic. I like alcohol. A lot. I remember the first time I got asked to speak, I was really nervous about it. So I talked to my sponsor, and he gave me some words of encouragement. He said that the reason why we speak at an AA meeting isn't so we can say the perfect thing, or it isn't so we look really good. He said the reason to speak at an AA meeting is to get chicks. So, I'm sorry to bum out all the girls here, but that worked for me. I'm married to an AA chick, so an AA mega fox. If I don't have alcohol inside of me, and I'm not doing the steps of AA or going to meetings, I'm an uncomfortable person. And without alcohol, I'm doing a lot of thinking. And a lot of my thinking is about what you're thinking. But I'm an advanced thinker. So I start thinking about what you're thinking, I'm thinking. And I don't have to talk to you to get mad at you. I just figured out that you think that I think that and I don't think that. So screw you. And at that point, I don't want anyone to talk to me. And they don't. So, I'm uncomfortable. I am the type of person that likes to compare and despair. My favorite game is to pick, you know, that guy that went to high school with me, only now he's a doctor and I'm not, and see how that makes me feel. Not good. And, you know, I like to watch MTV Cribs and compare their crib to my crib. See how that feels. But in high school, and there was a time in high school when alcohol was working for me. And, you know, I went to a party and there was a bunch of people there. But all of a sudden, I saw her at the other end of the room, and our eyes connected, and it was like the stars aligned, and the God said, "Duke, that's the girl meant for you." And she went out with me for 3 months, and I went out with her for 5 years. That gets pretty uncomfortable. When I'm that uncomfortable, I need fast-acting pain relief. And for me, that comes in the form of Keystone Light. Bottled taste in a can. And I guess that the unfortunate thing for me is that there came a day when alcohol didn't work. I mean, alcohol was my solution. Alcohol was my medication. And there came a day when alcohol was no longer wacky, zany, or crazy, or any of that stuff, and it just wasn't working anymore. And that's when it came time for AA. That and the judge told me to go. So, but I remember the first time I got two DUIs, and the first one was when I was 19, and I had to go to like 60 AA meetings in 90 days, something ridiculous like that. And I remember I went to like just a couple AA meetings, and it was these old biker dudes. And I think I just left early, and maybe I heard a little bit of something that kind of planted a seed, but I was 19, and I remember thinking, drinking's fun. Why do I want to go to AA? Because if you want to have fun drinking, you shouldn't go to AA. I learned that. So I didn't go to AA. I just had fun and drank. And then, but the thing is eventually a court date comes and they want to see all the signatures on the court card. So I got really stressed. You know, I'm a really stressful person. I worry because it might not all work out right. So I have to figure it out and stuff. And, that's stressful and I need to drink more. And, so we just had a party at my house and I passed the card around. And everyone signed it. I was living in San Francisco, and we're just making up meetings, you know? Like, we'd put cross streets that didn't even cross. And I gave it to the judge, and they said, good job, and that was it. So it worked for, that worked for me. That's my experience. My experience is that AA doesn't really work unless you want to be here. And they say that AA isn't for people who need it. And I say it isn't even for people who want it. AA is for people who work it. That's it. It's not going to work unless I throw myself into it and do the work. So, you know, I remember I continued to party, and I got my second DUI a few years later when I was 21. And this time, AA had planted a seed, and people had told me I'm an alcoholic a few times. And so it started to, you know, I knew after the second DUI, you kind of know that maybe you have an issue. So I was planning on quitting, and I, kind of, and I just turned 21, I had to party a little bit, and so I remember there was that girl, you know, that I was going out with, but she wasn't going out with me. So the relationship was getting more and more rocky. And I remember I went up and I was drinking. I was living down here at the time, and she was in San Francisco. And I went up there and somehow showed up at her house at like 3:30 in the morning, and I was with my drunk friends, and we barged into her house, and I was with one of those like idiot friends that like got naked or something, and jumped into her roommate's bed, and then he gets kicked out of that bed and comes into the kitchen where I am, and he goes into my, I thought she was my girlfriend's purse, and he like takes out all this cash, and I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And so I grab the cash from him, and then she walks around the corner and like sees me with the cash, you know, and is like, I hate you. What are you doing? And I go, that wasn't me. And she goes, get out of here. And so, you know, she hated me, and so that wasn't good. And it was the next day. I was just completely like humiliated, crushed, and life wasn't really working for me. And so that was when I made the decision to quit drinking, right after the holidays. And because it was like right before Thanksgiving, you don't want to quit right then. You know, there's a lot of good stuff going on. And so what I did was I drank every day with all of my friends. And I knew a little bit about AA by this point, and so I just told them, I'm all, you guys better enjoy me now, because I'm going to get sober and go to AA. And they're like, dude, can we just drink, you know? And So they were like, yeah, whatever, dude. And no one really believed me. And then New Year's came and went, and I'm still, you know, I'm still drinking. And the thing is that I heard that God has a weird thing that he'll take your character defects and use them as assets. And one of my character defects is I really care what people think. And I told so many people that I was going to quit drinking that I was like, wow, you're going to look like an idiot if you don't at least try to quit drinking. So, and you know, I told all my friends, like, this is when I'm drunk, I'm going to get a sponsor, I'm going to do the steps, I'm going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I'm going to do everything. And they're like, dude, let's just drink. And so it's not fun drinking with a guy that's going to do all that stuff either, you know. And so the first day I quit drinking, and I didn't go to a meeting. But I had a good excuse because I decided to quit smoking on the same day. And all those AA people smoke, so it's better to stay away, you know? And second day, same excuse. And then, you know, but eventually, you know, third day, same thing. And I also didn't have a license, and that's kind of a hassle, you know? So turns out that I'm just not drinking, but still hanging out with all my old friends, going to parties where there is drinking. And but just drinking Snapple, but in a paper bag, so I look like I'm drinking. And I did that for my first 90 days of sobriety. Come to find out, drinking parties aren't as fun when you're not drinking. This is just something that I've learned. And one of the reasons is because it's like always fun when you like first get there and everyone's like, hey, bro, what's up? And they're like cracking that first beer and it seems like so much fun. But then like when they're like on their fourth beer or fifth beer and they're telling you the same thing that they've already told you three times, only this time they're like kind of spitting it in your face. Then it's just not as fun. So it sucks, actually. And I remember after 90 days, I was talking to my friend, and he was the drummer in my band that kind of broke up because of drinking. And that was a whole thing. Like the band had, we had problems as a band, and because a lot of us like to drink, and we're like a classic rock band. And everything was going really good. I like to blame all the people. We were going to, like, totally make it and stuff. And the lead singer, you know, he's a good singer and stuff, but we're classic rock. But then one day someone gave the lead singer methamphetamine and an Iron Maiden album. And he stopped singing and just was, like, screaming, but with a lot of vibrato. And then like the lead guitarist, his parents were Mormon. And so, they threatened to disown him if he didn't go on a mission. So I hate the Mormons at that point. And then the, bass player is mad because the drummer slept with his girlfriend and tried to have him killed with thugs by a cattle prod. So, the band wasn't going too good, and but I think this was like right before it all fell apart, and I remember talking to my drummer, and we're like in a club or something. I don't go to clubs, but for some reason I was about to go to one at this night, and I remember telling him, I said, you know what, I think maybe I was being a little dramatic with the whole quit drinking altogether thing. And, you know, I feel pretty good now. I'm young. And, I don't know. I think, you know, I think maybe I could always get sober later. And I remember him, he's still drinking. And he said, Duke, you can't do it. He said, you're doing so good. Look how far you've come in 90 days. Like, you look better, and you're writing all these great songs, and you're doing so good. And he said, you're my only hope that anyone could do this. And so I remember thinking, wow, this isn't even going to AA. Just by me just setting down the drink alone, it was noticeable to other people just by setting down the drink. And so I didn't drink that night. And then I just got a backtrack. In junior high, I went to Miguel Hill. I lived in Mission Viejo, pretty tough neighborhood, you might know. And I used to, in junior high, we used to go to the other side of the tracks across Marguerite. That's where the bad kids lived, and to score marijuana. And so I'd go to this kid's house. He was a latchkey kid, and he was like the kind of, he had like all these bags of marijuana under his bed, and you were allowed to just smoke inside the house and stuff. And he would always be drinking too, and I remember like just watching him go crazier and crazier. And like, I still remember like to this day, he was wearing van shoes, and he like was all drunk, and he like killed a rat, and it had like the Vans imprint on it. And he had a little bit of an issue. And then I remember over the years, like watching this guy with his alcoholism get way worse and way worse. And he was like gnarly, turn into like a different person. And then like junior year in high school, a bunch of us went out to Wildomar, and there was a bunch of people there, and we all took too much LSD. And this guy was there, and he did too much too. And I remember someone had the smart idea to bring an axe for the firewood. So this guy gets a hold of the axe, and he's carrying the axe around, and I just remember looking at this evil look in his eyes, and he's walking around just going, I'm gonna kill someone. And I remember thinking, dude, I just want to trip out on the fire. And he had this axe, and I was getting scared. And then he killed my cooler. And that was when I decided it's time to go to the next campsite down. And but I distinctly remember that evil in his eyes. It was evil. And so fast forward, I'm sober 90 days. I was about to start drinking again. Haven't gone to any AA. And out of the blue, this guy gives me a call and goes, hey, Duke, I heard that you were looking for work. I'm in construction. I have some work for you. So I start working for him. It turns out he's 2 years sober in AA. So we start talking about it, and he becomes my my sponsor, and he starts taking me to the meetings and stuff, and like starts introducing me to the people. And it's such a miracle. I remember him dropping me off from work one day and just like looking at his eyes, and you see something in the eyes of people in AA, especially you notice it when you first get here. And I just remember looking in his eyes and seeing like a love in his eyes, and I remember the evil in his eyes before, and I was like, if AA can transform that dude to this, then there's something here that's going on, and I'm going to try it. So the only problem, and it's great, you know, he like took me to the Canyon Club, and he took me to the Monday night step meeting and the Saturday hospital meeting, and he took me to the couch meeting on Friday nights, and he showed me a meeting for every day of the week, and that was cool. But the thing is that I still felt young, you know, I still had the band and that kind of stuff. And I remember thinking that I'm not that sick, you know, I'm not that bad of an alcoholic. I'm still kind of young, and I'm only kind of alcoholic. So when you're kind of alcoholic, then what that means is that you don't have to show up, you know, right on time when the meeting's starting. You can just show up a little bit late and then sit in the back and then leave right at the end. And that's what I was doing. And also, you don't really have to, like, raise your hand to share or anything like that or any of that kind of stuff. And I remember seeing some people that were, like, really messed up alcoholics. And they were, like, so bad that they had to, like, get a sponsor and stuff. And and they had to work the steps. And I remember thinking, wow, that guy is screwed up. And then after a while, I'd see these guys change. And I remember wishing, I wish I was as messed up as that guy. Because then I would have to do AA. But I don't have to because I'm not that messed up. So you want to be careful for what it is that you wish for. One thing that I learned, and I started to become sick in AA. And I've heard that alcoholism is a progressive disease. It's just getting worse, not getting better. For me, alcohol was just a medication to that disease. And if I just set down the medication and I don't do anything else, my disease is still progressing. I'm going to get pretty messed up, especially in my head. And I've heard that if you come to AA and you decide that you're not going to get a sponsor and you're not going to do the steps and you're just going to sit in the meetings and that's all that you're going to do, it's basically the same as someone who just got a huge head injury. They're bleeding out of their head. It's very serious. But they're in the emergency room and people are saying, okay, why don't you go into the doctor now? And they're saying, no, I don't really want to go to the doctor. I'm just going to hang out here in the emergency room. And then they just start complaining, why am I not getting better? And maybe you should see the doctor. So that was my experience. And in my first whole year, it was all about plans. It was because I was behind schedule. So I don't know if you guys are probably mostly on schedule. I don't know. But I was behind schedule. I needed to, like, catch up and stuff. And I got to, like, get back in school. I got to get the girl back. I got to get the band back together. And it was all about all this stuff that I got to do. So it was, like, all about outside stuff in my life. I got to do all this and do that. And I moved up to San Francisco. And I'm in San Francisco State. And eventually, you know, it was just, I'm kind of hitting meetings here and there, but, you know, I'm not a part of or anything like that. And so eventually I start going crazy. And I start getting even more messed up than I was when I was drinking. And turns out, you know, like, I'm like failing out of school. I'm super stressed out. My roommates aren't doing their dishes. The girl that I'm going out with is actually going out with her boyfriend. And I start freaking out, and I start having these panic attacks of, like, these heart palpitations, clammy palms, and just crazy feeling like you're just going to die or something, like a saber-toothed tiger is about to kill you, and your body's saying, you're going to die right now. And I'm freaking out, like, oh, my God, I'm having a heart attack. And so I go to the emergency room, and they're wheeling me on the gurney. And I'm like, dude, I'm sober. In my head, I'm thinking, I'm sober over a year. And I'm in the emergency room. I'm way crazier, way more screwed up than I ever was when I was drinking. And it was at that point when I really hit bottom. And I said, I don't care anymore. I don't care about the roommates. I don't care about school. I don't care about the girl. I don't care about the shirt on my back. I don't care about anything anymore. The one thing that I'm going to do is go to AA, and I'm going to do it the same way that I drank, which is full force, full force. And it was right when I made that decision, it was like the universe passionately rearranged itself to show me what to do next. And so I went to a meeting and I got one of those sponsors that has nothing better to do than go to AA. And he gave me instructions and I followed him. And he said, I'm not going to be one of those sponsors that like tells you a bunch of stuff to do or whatever. I'm not going to be one of those sponsors that tells you what to do. He says, I'll tell you what it is that I do. He says, if you want what I have, you can do what I do. And he did a lot, and not just AA stuff. Just he's kind of crazy. And but he did a lot of AA. And he said, he told me to get a notebook. And to write down, he said in the beginning of the notebook, write down AA suggestions. And then in the middle of the notebook, we had a space for to do step work. And at the back, we had AA phone numbers. So write down all the AA phone numbers. Then that was before cell phones. So and he told me to bring the notebook with me to every meeting. And I was, why doesn't anybody else have a notebook? And but, okay, I'm willing. You know, I don't want to go back to the emergency room. He told me to sit in the front row. He said, that's the intensive care unit. You're a sick alcoholic. You need to be there. And my first over a year, I never said anything. I never raised my hand. I didn't talk to anyone. And he said, stay shy and die. So he told me I need to raise my hand at every AA meeting, even if I don't know what to say. So, God dang it, I don't want to do that. And so I would raise my hand because I was willing, and I would just say, my name's Duke, I'm alcoholic, my sponsor told me to raise my hand, and that's it. And but I would do it at every meeting. And he told me, and I had to write all this stuff in the notebook. He said, these were the first suggestions that he ever gave me in this notebook. He said, write these things down. It's not fair. It's not going to go your way. And you're not going to get what you want. He said, once we get that out of the way, we'll get along a lot better. So he told me to arrive 15 minutes early to the meeting. Stay 15 minutes late. He told me to go to a meeting a day. He told me to plan my day around a meeting. He told me to put AA first and everything else will follow. He told me to go to the same meetings every week. So on Monday night, the same meeting. Tuesday night, the same meeting. He said, make sure one of those meetings is a big book meeting. Make sure one of those meetings is a 12-and-12 meeting, because you're probably not going to read the big book on your own. But if you go to a meeting every week where they make you read it, then you'll be able to read the big book. Same thing with the 12-and-12. You're not going to read that on your own. But if you go to a meeting every week where they read it, then you're going to end up reading it. So I started taking his suggestions. He said, if you want to feel a part of in AA, then you need to participate in AA. And he told me to get commitments, which I did. And you know, I think one of my first commitments is my favorite commitment, which is the greeter commitment. And because I didn't have any social skills when I came to AA. I learned all my social skills in AA, actually. And the first was greeting. And you just have to say, hi, my name's Duke. Welcome to AA. And you put your hand out like that, and you do that to everyone. And eventually you get to know people, and they get to know you. And that was a tool that I could bring out into real life. You just drop the AA part. Hi, my name's Duke. And you shake their hand. And that's a tool I learned in AA, real world. And I got other commitments. I got the secretary commitment. And then you start figuring out that we're not in Well People's Anonymous. People in AA are very messed up. You need to know this. So, and you'll really find out when you get the secretary commitment, because they'll show you how messed up they are by telling you what you're doing wrong. And I was the secretary at 1010 Valencia in the Mission District in San Francisco for the midnight meeting. I did it for a year and a half. And this was during the time it was kind of a bad neighborhood, you know, and it was at midnight. And it was during the time when it was going from smoking meeting to non-smoking meeting. And so I remember that I remember that some people didn't want it to go to non-smoking meeting. But that had been decided already. And so one guy smoking and another guy saying, you better put that out. And he said, what are you going to do about it? And then so the other guy took his cigarette and put it out in his coffee. And then a fist fight broke out. And then someone said to me, and what are you going to do about this? And I said, I'm not doing anything. And he said, you're a spineless jellyfish. So I didn't know jellyfishes had spines. I didn't know what to say to that guy. And the thing is that eventually you learn. And it's kind of like what my sponsor said in the beginning. He said, if you want what I have, do what I do. So the cool thing about AA is there's all kinds of different people. There's cool people, lame people, old people, young people, angry people, nice people, whatever kind you want to be, watch that person, say, is that what I want? If it is, then do what they do. You know what I mean? And that's the cool thing about AA, is there's AA for everybody. If you want to go to the freak meeting, you can go to the freak meeting, you know? If you want to go to the uptight, old-timer, we-know-everything meeting, you can be that guy, you know? If you want to go to the men's only, we're better than everyone else and scared of women meeting, you can go there. So that's the cool thing, is AA adapts, and we change as people, hopefully, you know, and we grow. And as we grow, you know, maybe you were able to go to morning meetings, but now you have to go to night meetings. And that's the great thing about Orange County AA, is there's meetings all the time. And there's all kinds of meetings, and you can find your crew, you can find your group. You know, you don't have to try to change into someone who you're not. That's what I don't want. I don't want to become someone who I'm not. I want to become me. I want to become who I'm supposed to be. And I think that's what the AA steps are for. It isn't so you can like conform to any one person and become them. You're going to be miserable if you do that. AA is to look inside yourself, clean out all the garbage, and become who you're supposed to be, because we're all diamonds here. And a diamond, there takes immense pressure that we go through, and that's all the pain that we go through. But, you know, we go through it and you become a diamond. I'm a diamond. And you just got to go for it. So my sponsor is taking me through the steps. And one of the important steps is the fourth step, and that's all the people that you're resentful at, like the Mormon. And the lead singer who did Iron Maiden songs, and I put those names down. I wrote them down, and I wrote why I was mad at them. And I wrote, how did this affect me? Did it affect, you know, my self-esteem, my pocketbook, my ambitions, my mental health? And then the part that most of us never get to is my part. What was my part in all of this? You know, because I think that's the main part of the fourth step, is looking at our own part. And for me, I'm spending so much time thinking about how's it all going to work out and trying to manipulate everything so it works out my way. And I was so scared that it wasn't going to work out. And it was like I was carrying the weight of the world on my shoulders. And it was so heavy. And when I came to AA, I was allowed to just let that all go. And I learned that AA, you know, it isn't about like getting all your circumstances perfect. It isn't about learning to get everything to go your way. AA, a lot of it is about learning how to love the way that it actually is going. So that was a tough one for me. And, you know, we moved to steps 6 and 7. And that's when we look at, for me, it's like when you're doing a 4-step, I remember this is what my sponsor told me. He said, when you're doing the 4-step, he said, look at it like your parents went out of town and you threw like a keg party for all weekend and you didn't, everyone was raging at your house and it was probably fun, but it's Sunday and your mom's about to come home. And the place is trash, so what do? You get these big, black, hefty trash bags, and you just start throwing the big stuff in there first. That's how we looked at the 4-step. Just throw the big stuff in there first. Make sure you get the big stuff, because this is a lifelong process. We'll get a comeback, get to the big stuff. For me, the 5th step is the exact nature of your wrongs. And what that means is you do this 4-step, and you start coming up with these patterns that keep happening with all my relationships. I keep doing the same thing. And so it's usually just a few things that's happening with me. And in the 7th step, you know, we take that to God. And God says, I'm willing to have all of you, the good and the bad. And that's when it says, I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. And to me, what that means is that if I still have character defects, they might not all be removed. If I still have some, maybe they're still being of use. I've seen some people in AA that have a lot of character defects. Maybe you have too. And the thing is those character defects have been useful for me to write a resentment on that person and grow from it. So that person is helping me by having their character defects. And you're going to have them until they're too painful. And then they're no longer of use anymore. So when God says, I'm willing to have the good and the bad, I'm willing to have all of you. If God's willing to have all of me, the good parts and the bad parts, maybe it's time for me to start accepting me for who I am. Because I was never okay with me, who I am. There was always something wrong. If God's willing to have the good and the bad, that's when maybe I can say to myself, I don't get to take credit anymore. I don't get to take credit for the good stuff. But at the same time, I can let go of all the shame and all the blame and all the self-hatred. And I remember, you know, my inner dialogue with myself all day long. I hate you, Duke. I hate you, Duke. I hate you. Hate you. Hate you, Duke. Hate you. And I remember when I first started like trying to change that talk, and my sponsor was showing me like some workout stuff, and I had a mirror and I was in my house, and I was lifting weights going, I love you, Duke. I love you, Duke. And it felt really weird because it was the opposite that I've been telling myself my whole life, you know? And so it's another thing about the 7th step. I used to think, you know, like I'm so less than everyone else. Everyone's, you know, I mean, I may be better than a few people, but less than most people. And I remember my sponsor saying, yeah, you know, like humility, which they're talking about in the 7th step, is not being less than anyone, but it's also not being greater than anyone. It's being equal to. And he said, that's a good deal for you since you're less than most people. So I also had a problem with God when I first came to AA and every year prior coming to AA too. And it was because I had this God that was very mad at me, and it wasn't fun. And I remember that the only sermon I heard in church was the pastor was saying, you know, I hear a lot of you saying, oh, I want to go to hell because all my friends are going to hell and we're just going to have a party there. And he said, you're wrong. There's no party there because you're going to be in an isolated chamber with your eyes welded shut and your wrists welded together, welded to your ankles, burning for eternity. So don't you hate it when someone ruins your perfect Vision of Hell party. So I remember one night partying with my friends, like, you know, the night after you had spent all night doing probably something really bad, and you're just drinking some beers in the car before you're going to go to bed, and I remember we were talking about it, and my friend had a lighter, and he was putting his hand over the lighter going, I don't know, I think I can get used to it. And that was when the Mormon said, no, it gets gradually worse for eternity. So there goes the getting used to it idea. And that was my God. It was like this guy with, you know, the gray beard just slamming lightning bolts on me every time I had that thought. And so my sponsor said, in AA, it's God as you understand him. If that God isn't working for you anymore, why don't you get a God that does? Why don't you get a God that you're stoked on, that you're comfortable with? Why don't you get a God that maybe it would be a good idea to have a God that likes you, actually. So I thought about it for a while. And then my first God that I came up with was a this hot chick supermodel who just like checked out my butt all day long from the sky. And all of a sudden, God started being fun, you know? And prayer is a lot funner when it's sexy. So that was my entrance, you know? That got me in. It got me through the door. And so you know, it allowed me to pray, and my sponsor would give me all kinds of crazy things. I lived in the city, and I would, you know, I drove, and people honked their horn, and my sponsor said, how about every time someone honks their horn, it's God telling you to pray? So I said, okay, and then, you know, I'd be driving, beep, beep, instead of, like, you know, getting mad, I'd be like, oh, hey, God, what's going on? And and it would be like little tweaks like that. And my sponsor also said about the girl, he said that there's tools. These are his spiritual tools. He said there's a good tool for figuring out who your girlfriend is. And he said, this is the tool. If she is the girl around your arm, then she's your girlfriend. But if she's around his arm, she's his girlfriend. So you could also bring this tool into your parking life, too. And I learned that this is a really easy way to figure out if it's your parking spot. If your car's in it, it's yours. If not, it's not yours. So these are some of the tools that I'm learning from this guy. And I remember he would give me all kinds of crazy stuff to do. He said, you're growing now. He said, take pictures because so you can document it. So I just took pictures of myself all day long, you know, for like the first year. And I got them all. So it's cool. And you know, I know the picture. That was when I was doing my ninth step. And that was when I was doing my 11th step. For my 11th step, you know, we would downhill skateboard, me and my sponsor. And that was my first 11th step. He taught me how to, you know, surf style skate down hills and engage in the unborn Buddha mind. So that was how we started. And then you know, he said that he would give me all those kind of tips for living, to learn how to love the way it's going. He said that God is like a DJ and he's spinning the record live. And he said you got to dance to the tune the DJ's spinning. You know, you can't get upset if he doesn't play your song. You can't just stand around the whole time. You got to dance, and you can give him requests, you know, but you got to dance to the tune, DJ spinning. So I used to stress out all the time, and he gave me these sayings for myself. He said this was my saying that he helped make up for me, and that is, the party starts when the worrying stops. And that was a good one for me, because when I'm worrying, I'm definitely not partying. So you want to be partying if you're in AA, right? I mean, this is the after party. So don't get sober and then get miserable. That sucks. You know, get sober and do the steps and get high on now. You know, do a bong load of now, a couple lines of now. One day my sponsor said, I don't like the way that you're dressing. I think I was wearing bell bottoms or something and with holes in them. And so he said, I'm going to come over to your house. So he came over to my room and he had this big hefty trash bag and he said, we're going to go through your closet. I had a full closet stuff. And he said, this is going to be the rule. He said, we're going to look at each article of clothing. And the first rule is, if you haven't worn it in a year, it's out. Throw it out. The second rule is I'm going to show you this article of clothing. And if you say, he's going to say, do you like it? And if I say, maybe, we throw it out. He's going to say, do you like this one? If I say, I don't know, we throw it out. But if he says, do you like this one? And I say, cuss, yeah, I like that one. then we keep it. We keep it. So if so he would go, okay, this. I go, maybe, out of here. This, cuss, yeah, keep it. This, I don't know, out of here. So the thing that I learned is that nature abhors a vacuum. And what that means is that nature doesn't like a space with nothing there. It likes to fill that space. And what I have to do is get rid of all the maybes and the I don't knows to make room for the cuss yeahs. So, because if your life is just filled with all this maybes and I don't knows, there's no room for cuss yeahs. I would use the word, but I just say cuss. So, I said, you know, this is a pretty good tool. So I learned, you know, that if you're going out with a girl, it's hard for a new girl to come in there. Unless you're really lucky. I haven't been that lucky. So it's hard too, especially if the girl that's there isn't even there. She's like really with someone else. So first thing I did was I said, we're going to have to take a break. It's over. And then I started, I said, you know, I'm getting, because she was a total maybe. I don't know. So I started saying, yeah, I'm going to bring this tool into my love life. And I was going up to girls saying, hey, how's it going? Are you my girlfriend? They would usually say, I don't know you. Okay, I'll talk to you later. And then, you know, I'd go do it to the next one. It would be probably the same story. But eventually, I met the cuss yeah girl. And she is now my wife. And we met when we had about 2.5 years sober. She did too. She has 3, 2.5 months more than me. And she doesn't ever let me forget it. We both have 16 years, but there was a time when she had 16 and I have 15, and it happens every year. And she says, you know, hon, 16's great. You wouldn't understand, but it's really nice. So we got to have some kids in sobriety, too. And the first one, he learned how to clap in AA. And so... you know, I've learned that life isn't easy. Life isn't easy once you come to AA like I thought it was going to be. You still have to do the work. And after you do the steps, it doesn't get easy either. Because eventually, life's going to happen again. And then you got to do the steps again. And but the way that I like to look at it is I like to think of God. Now I just, you know, I kind of I don't really use the supermodel as much anymore. It's more of my guardian angel. And I just go straight to the big guy. And I like to look at him like a personal trainer. And he's like taking me in the gymnasium called life. And the thing is your personal trainer, he knows how much weight to put on there. You know, and sometimes it seems like he's putting on too much weight. But the thing is if you don't go through some pain, you're never going to grow. So trust the spiritual trainer and just understand that the weight is just right. Keep going to AA. Do the steps whenever you feel uncomfortable and stick your hand out there and sponsor someone after you've done the steps. Thank you for letting me share.